Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Dan Quinn will talk today at 12:30 as they begin serious preparation for the Titans on Sunday at 1 o'clock in what will be the coldest game of the year so far, and probably the coldest game that Jaden Daniels has ever played in. Temperatures at kickoff in the mid-30s going up to maybe 39 or 40 degrees during the game. But it will be sunny. By the way, Denton and I just looked it up. Buffalo Sunday night snow game, looks like. 49ers Bills to end Thanksgiving weekend. All right, Ben Standing is with us today. He will be there for Dan Quinn at 12:30. So let's start with the kicker situation. I think, summarized the most likely possibilities, which are he was either not 100% and they brought him up and had him kick Sunday against Dallas, or he was re-injured somehow during the game. A, am I missing any of the other possibilities or likely possibilities? B, what do you think happened?
Well, I'll throw out option C. They decided they were going to move on with him and didn't want to just cut him, because then it would be putting the blame squarely on him. But also, like, they put him and keeping him on IR means that, they could still bring him back. Again, he was, 26 of 28 going into this game. He's been one of the big heroes, probably a stretch, but, he's been one of the big keys to this season prior to his injury. So I think the missing the extra point, we all understand, everything's not just down to one play, but wow, that's just such a huge miss. The other element is, Dan Quinn said the other day, he was asked after the game, why didn't he just kick the ball have Cyber kick it out of the end zone? And he responded on the kick to Turpin, when he ran it back 99 yards. And Quinn said, it's not as easy to kick it out of the end zone or touchback as much as you think. So I looked it up, and on Pro Football Reference, it shows that, there have been 39 kickers this year with at least 15 kickoff attempts. Of those 39, in terms of touchback percentage, Austin Seibert ranked last, 23%. He's not, that's the thing, right? He's pretty consistent typically from, 49 in, but longer kicks is not his deal. Now, I don't know if they're telling him to kick it short versus not, but, I think both of these things are factors. So that's my guess, that, they wanted to keep him, but at the same time, I think they were it's going to be hard to run you back right now after that. That's my best guess. But maybe you've heard. I don't know.
All right, a couple things that you just mentioned that I want to follow up on. Number one is this.
Sure.
They, you know, have been and they've led the league, and, you know, we kind of all picked up on this trend 3 or 4 weeks into the season that they really preferred. We thought it was a preference rather than they didn't have an option to kick it into the landing zone. And by the way, they were excellent at covering kicks. They've been excellent at covering punts. They've been excellent at covering kicks. He's talked about, you know, some of the team identity being what they've been on special teams with Reeves and Ballore and McNichols, et cetera, you know, getting down and covering kicks. But I'd ask you now, were they doing that because with the guy that they found that could make field goals, 7 for 7, by the way, in his very first game, and they weren't going to turn him loose after that because of all the issues they were having trying to replace Brandon McManus, do you think that that was because they didn't have the option of booting it out of the end zone or booting it deep enough? He does have some touchback kickoffs, but was it just that consistently he wasn't going to be able to do that?
Yeah, maybe it's the consistency part because, like, I looked up, Zane Gonzalez in the limited kicks he's had when he was playing was around similar percentage to Seibert, but for his career, he's a little bit over 50%.
Right.
And 39 kickers that I mentioned, 34 were at least 50% or better. So most of the league is able to, you know, do that half the time, or at least they've chosen to do that. So maybe it is primarily a preference, but yes, it does seem like maybe it's a preference knowing what you're dealing with. Because, I mean, you know, it feels like in this era, like, one of the points of the new kickoff rule was to have more kickoffs because these guys are kicking out of the end zone too often. So, like,
it was the number one reason for the rule change.
Right. I mean, yeah. So I just think that that's like something seems. I mean, look, like you said, it had been working for them. They, you know, they've largely been pretty good this year. But at the same time, it does feel like it's okay. This is the guy we have. Let's do this then. And I may ask Quinn about this today if I can, depending on what questions are. Well, but I do find it interesting.
Well, here's why it's significant in the moment, because it was so impactful Sunday to the final result. So you mentioned the third option, which is maybe they wanted to move on from him anyway, and this was just essentially a nice way of doing it by putting him on injured reserve, because he was 25 of 27 going into the game. He made his first one, so he was 26 of 28 before he missed a field goal, then made one, and then missed two PATs. What are we talking about here? Were they just trying to be compassionate?
Well, I don't know. I did the same exercise you were doing, obviously, just trying to figure out what's the deal. I don't know about the injury. I mean, but yeah, look, he went on IR, but I don't know that he had something new. Again, maybe Quinn will give us that information today. He obviously had the hip, so I'm sure they could say, hey, it's still bothering him. Look, he just missed the extra point, so we're going to do that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it just feels like that's a possibility, I think, to some degree. Because, again, like, to me, that kick to Turpin, I can't say it's more impactful than the missing an extra point, which we just typically view as such a gimme, an afterthought. That's like, oh my, and especially coming in the way that it came. But I do feel like the kickoff was, you know, a huge moment as well. Seibert said, hey, I should not have kicked it straight at him. And look, you know, if Jordan McGee stays in his lane or Jeremy Reeves is able to corral him, Turpin, when he's coming up, then we're not having a discussion, but that's the way it broke down. So, you know, I am curious. Look, again, they may just be like, hey, we're good kicking it short and having our players on special teams make the play, but, you know, it feels like there's something else there. And then when Quinn says it's not as easy as you think, and yet half the league, or sorry, 34 of the 39 kickers with at least 15 kicks have half the time that in a touchback.
Yeah, it's been easy for everybody for a long time.
Right. Right.
But it wasn't easy for him on Sunday because obviously he was hurting. The question is, was he hurting going into the game or did he re-injure during the game? And that's where I think it's just interesting because you were facing the most dangerous returner in the league. And some thought, you know, and I think there's some constructive criticism here that is warranted if they brought him up in lieu of having a bigger legged, healthy kicker facing the number one, you know, threat as a returner in the league. And maybe they just thought, well, I mean, you know, what's he really going to do? We should die. I mean, you don't think that way as a head coach. You got to think through everything. And it's a mistake if he wasn't 100% and didn't have the capability of kicking it deeper to have him activated. But then again, maybe he was healthy and he was re-injured himself during the game.
Right. I mean, the part that's also like so, like when everybody is saying, it was so stupid for Quinn. We talked about this the other day, for Quinn to kick the extra point and not go for two because he'd already missed some kicks and blah, blah, blah. He had just made a 51-yard field
exactly.
goal 77
yeah,
seconds
to me, that's
previously.
Not even, yeah.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, so even to the point of the injury, so he's able to make a 51-yarder 70 seconds of game
right.
minutes before and now, you know, so I don't know. You know, who knows? The fact that they have Zane Gonzalez – you know, may have been like, hey, look, we already have this other guy, and, you know, maybe we just give Seibert a break. We still like him. We're still curious going forward, but, you know, we'll see. I don't want to be overly conspiracy theory, but my version of the smell test here doesn't say that it's just because he might be hurt. That seems a little too convenient, but I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. Because heading, like, nobody flinched on him being activated. It was like, great, the guy that's made 25 out of 27 is back. Look, the only thing to me that wasn't debatable, the 2-point conversion, totally debatable. Kicking the 51-yarder on second down is debatable, but you don't kick to Turpin in that spot. Like, that's not debatable. However, the answer is they didn't have a choice because the guy they had kicking off wasn't capable of giving them a start at the 30-yard line with a touchback. All right, what about Brian Robinson Jr. and Austin Ekeler? What do you think we're going to learn about them today?
Well, so they worked out a couple of running backs yesterday, but my understanding is they're not signing any of them. And there were a couple of guys who, you know, been in the, you know, Boston Scott has been with the Eagles, yeah. James Robinson, who was the Jags leading rusher a couple years ago. So guys who, you know, have some ability, but my understanding is they're not signing any of them. I think they may be signing a defensive back, but I don't know for sure. So that says to me, if in fact they are not bringing in anybody else, that Brian Robinson has a chance to play. That's just a guess, but, like, you know, again, like, yes, I know they re-signed Chris Rodriguez, but even with Chris Rodriguez and McNichol, that's only two, and that's, you know, you would think you'd want, you know, I guess they can elevate Michael Wiley from the practice squad, but, you know, I'm not counting that as, like, a real thing. So my guess would be Robinson at least has some chance to play, but we'll just have to see how the weekend goes. Ekeler, obviously, you know, it's not just this concussion. It's his second one of the season, and, you know, he looked pretty out of it when he got up off the field the other day. When he had the concussion earlier in the year against the Bengals, he didn't play the next week. So just based on that and you know, again, the second one this year, I would guess he doesn't play, especially with the bye week coming up. My real question for the Ekeler thing is, when does he play again? Or if he plays again? I don't know. I don't want to go overboard and speculate, but just, you know, that looked like a pretty scary situation, and you know, that's obviously going to be a thing for them to discuss. So I seems hopeful that Robinson can go, but again, I have no idea until they get out there and practice, and we'll see that in a little bit.
Yeah, losing Ekeler for any significant amount of time is actually a big miss, and, you know, they've been without both of them at various times this year, and when they've had both of them healthy, they've been pretty damn good as a running football team. Is Brian Robinson Jr.'s ankle injury a high ankle sprain or not? Typically, high ankle sprains are much worse. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I mean, that hasn't been said, okay. So, you know, I would imagine if it was something more significant like that, it would have been out there by now. But no, we haven't heard that. But again, a good question for Dan Quinn today. And by the way, just to say, like, as a sort of a separate note for me, you know, the Jeremy McNichol has been effective, obviously, for them this year when he's played. I mean, he's been one of the bigger, frankly, surprises when he had some bigger games earlier in the year, bigger roles. But I had a, you know, when we did the initial 53, I kind of refused to put him on it partly because, one, I thought he could clear waivers, you know, because of, you know, he hadn't done anything really the previous 2 years. But secondly, I don't know what he is. In a situation now where hypothetically both Robinson and Eckler are out, he doesn't really replace either of them. He's not exactly this dynamic pass catcher, nor is he a guy you're going to run between the tackles. And for the third guy, for me, and I know you got to factor in special teams and things like that, can he do one of these things that you want them, what your running backs to do? I think Chris Rodriguez has a chance to, again, I'm not saying he's good as Robinson, but has a chance to replicate some of that tough running. And, you know, again, you can't solve all your problems. You can't fix all your depth. And McNichols has been a very fine player for them. No knocking that. He's done fine. But that's why, for me, like, I look for that third running back. Can you do something specific? And I don't know what he does. And that's why, like, I don't know what the running game looks like if he's in there, because he's not really beating you with strength. He's not really beating you with speed. So what's he doing? That's kind of why I view that third running back spot.
Yeah, I think it's opponent dependent. I think I bet if we went back and looked at his biggest runs on the season, they were zone read runs. They were you know, options for Jaden to either keep it or give it. Look, some of Brian Robinson Jr.'s and Eckler's biggest runs this year were read option plays, but it depends on the opponent. Tennessee is really tough in the interior. Jeffrey Simmons is a monster. They're a 3-4 base, you know, so that's a team that's tough to run on, period. Tough to throw on, period. But you got to get it going somehow, because they're better when they're running the football, I think, for sure. Ben Standing is joining us right now. Do you think we'll hear today about Lattimore's availability?
I just want to say, by the way, if you're a listener just tuning in, I thought Kevin gave an excellent breakdown of the Tennessee team in the opening segment. Go back and listen if you missed it. I enjoyed listening to that.
Are you being sarcastic?
Absolutely not. You did a great job of breaking down why the spread is half of what it was against Dallas, because Tennessee's actually got a lot of good stuff. They just have too many turnovers, and even that, with Levis is playing better. So we'll see how that goes. I obviously will get some sense of Lattimore, right? He'll be, you know, there'll be an injury report today and all that. You know, if he's not practicing today, like full practice, I don't know. It seems to me he's not playing this week. When you have the bye week coming up, you know, if he's not able to go right off the bat, then it says, okay, he's probably not really ready. So if that's the case, then, you know, wait another week, get to the bye, and go from there. You know, I think that, you know, what's there to say? He obviously, you know, I'm sure everybody wants him to be out on the field, himself included, but it hasn't happened yet. So, I've gotten people texting me, tweeting at me, why would Washington make a trade for a guy who was hurt? And what I can, best I can say is that the reason Adam Peters made this trade, it was not for this year. I mean, it was to help this year, but it was for the long haul. That this is a guy who's still in the prime of his career, a Pro Bowl level player, who's under contract for two more years, meaning not only at a position, mind you, where other than Mikey Sanders, still Washington doesn't have anybody under contract who, you know, is going to play. I'm not counting Emmanuel Forbes at this point. So it checks off a box for next year. They don't have to bid at like three or four different positions. They do one, and then obviously he would play this year. So if somehow he's not able to come back this week or whatever, there's still logic for making the deal. But obviously, you know, there's a reason they made it now, and they want him to be out there to help cover guys like, say, Calvin Ridley on the Titans, and then others going forward.
Well, look, the other part of it is that, you know, they caught the Saints in a moment. You know, they had just lost to the Panthers. They decided they were in sell mode. They've actually played much better since the trade. They wouldn't have had him for those games either. But, you know, ironically, the Saints are not out of this thing. They're sitting there at 4-7. They play Washington, you know, coming out of Washington's bye week. But they got a home game against the Rams and a game against the Giants to get to 6 6-7, which would put them right back in the mix. But Washington caught him at the right time. It was the right time to make that move. Whether he was really available before the trade deadline or not, the timing of it was great. And of course, there's an element to, we're 7-2, we're a contender, and we need a corner for this run. But to your point, he had 2 years left on his deal, so it wasn't, they weren't going to ever do a rental in this first year. We're talking to Ben Standing. By the way, I did not ask you about Andrew Wiley, who I guess I didn't realize until earlier this week that when he left the game, it was with a concussion. So he's in concussion protocol as well. And that, they're facing a tough front. That could be, they could use him Sunday. So I guess we'll find out more about him. By the way, a friend of mine texted me and said that Brian Robinson was on with the Junkies yesterday. So Brian Robinson was on with the Junkies yesterday and said it's not a high ankle sprain and he already feels much better. So that may be the reason that you believe they're not going to sign, other backs, is that they're going to have number 8 ready, hopefully.
That was at least some indication I got that they were going to not add anybody because they felt that he had a shot to play. What that shot meant was my question. But yeah, that's good. Good to know that it's not a high ankle sprain.
So, is this a code red game?
I think so. I mean, it is insane, right? The 3-8 team at home. You wouldn't think this would be too complicated, but look, they're 7-5. They're right now. Well, I guess it's two ways. If we're just talking about the playoff, right, put aside the building in the right direction and all that stuff. 7-5, they're only a half a game up on on Arizona. And I know they have the tiebreaker head-to-head, but Arizona could still win the division, so that I'm not worrying about that. But, yeah, they're half a game up on Arizona right now. If they lose this game, you're going to a bye miserable, so I don't know how relaxing it'll be for everybody, certainly probably not for the coaching staff. And then look at look what's coming up. I mean, the Saints, like you said, are playing better, and it's in New Orleans. You've got the Eagles, who obviously are one of the best teams in the league. Atlanta, when Kirk Cousins in that passing game is going, they've been very hard to beat this year. And then Dallas, look, Week 18, we can say all the things we want. They just beat Washington, so I think they got to win this game because I think when you look at a bigger picture, I think getting to 10 wins. Putting aside that would be a big accomplishment to get to double-digit wins, 10 wins would probably mean you're in the playoffs, right? 9 wins might, but now you're letting the NFC West teams have a little more of a chance. Again, it may only be Seattle and Arizona at this point, and they would have to, still get 3 wins each to get to 9. But if you lose to Tennessee, now you have to win 2 of your last 4 to get to 9, and, it's becoming harder to see where that's happening. 2 of the games are on the road. The 2 tougher opponents are at home, so that's somewhat helpful, I guess. But yeah, no, I think this is. I think they need. If we're talking playoffs, I think you got to win this game, or it is going to be very tense. Maybe not for them, but in the discussion about where this team is at, for sure.
I think you're right. I mean, look, all the macro stuff. If they end up with 8 wins, 9 wins, don't go to the playoffs, we've learned that they got the quarterback right. We've learned that the head coach is pretty good. But ultimately, they just didn't have the right supporting cast. They had some, injuries at the wrong time. They played in a crazy, crazy game with special teams plays all over that we'll almost never forget on Sunday. And the big picture, I mean, it'd be hard for the big picture to be tainted at this point. I guess it could be if they lost, 4 out of their final 5 and it really, really regressed in terms of the quarterback. But I think that the big picture's solidified, but you don't, as fans, you don't think that way in, late November, December. You expected a couple of weeks. The expectations have gone from, let's just find out about the quarterback, to, whoa, we might have a chance for the playoffs, to, oh my God, this could be an 11-plus win season. We could be a contender, to now back to, we've dialed back the expectations to, they're hanging on for dear life, hopefully they'll just make the playoffs and have a meaningful game. Which, by the way, let me just mention, because I've mentioned this before over the years when they've had these chances. And even in 2020, when people are saying, no, don't make the playoffs as a 7-9 team because you're going to, you know, ruin your draft position. I think playing meaningful games for the young players on this team down the stretch and then playing potentially in a playoff game at Lambeau, let's just say, or not at Lambeau, but maybe at in Atlanta or Tampa or Seattle in the first round or Philadelphia, that's huge, invaluable experience that does carry over. You know, even when the roster changes significantly, especially for a young quarterback to play in those games, I want to see that. I don't want to see that get squandered away. And if you lose Sunday, that possibility now exists that you're playing not meaningful games, the final two or so, and not in the postseason. So I don't want to, at this point, throw away that kind of an experience that is still very much a possibility.
Well, as somebody who was leading the bandwagon for don't make the playoffs in 2020 because of all those reasons,
yeah,
it's massively different now. The reason then was, we see how the players turned out, but you had a chance to draft a Justin Fields or a Mac Jones or whatever, some young quarterback. That part doesn't matter now. And while we always talk about, you know, no matter what the position is, obviously you're better off picking as high as you can because therefore, in theory, you're getting the pick of the litter. You know, you can get all kinds of players. You know, there's, you know, as we know, there's 22 starters on the field, offense, defense, which means that there's lots of guys, lots of positions who are going to get, guys who are going to start who are going to get picked in the first round and even in the second round. So it doesn't matter now. Making the playoffs, having that experience for the quarterback, I agree, would be very beneficial, and there should be zero discussion of, well, they're better off losing. That makes no sense anymore. That's out as long as you believe Jaden Daniels is the guy, which obviously everybody does. So, that part's not relevant. But, yeah, you hope, obviously, that at this point that they go forward just because it would be a positive experience, not just to have the experience of playing in the game, the playoff game, but actually not stubbing your foot so badly you don't even make the playoffs at this point. Because, you know, the human beings in the locker room, they don't care about anything we're talking about. They
want to, of course not.
They're tasting this. They see it, and to be so close to them to not get it would be, you know, obviously pretty painful.
I think the difference in 2020 was Jamin Davis at, was it 19? And I think 12 was a possibility.
I think they would have been picking like 10 or 11 based on, I think, where the Giants.
I thought it was 12, but you might be right.
And like, you know, even if you don't take Justin Fields, Micah Parsons was sitting there. If they were really
Giants
that
would have drafted, the Giants would have drafted at 11, and that's who would have made the won the division. So Washington would have been at 11. Remember, they're the ones that traded with Chicago to give them the chance to draft Justin Fields. I just remember thinking Chase Young's dominant. I mean, you know, in the moment, he's having a rookie of the year, dominant rookie of the year season. Sweats great, Allen and Payne. This is gonna be great for them. But who did we miss out on? We missed out on Micah Parsons. That's who we missed out on.
Devonta Smith was picked. Right around
before
there,
yeah, the pick before, yeah.
J.C. Horn was right around there.
They were all picked before 11.
All before, okay. Well, yeah. But I'm forgetting who was there. But yeah, I mean, some of these guys were still sitting there.
All right, I'll talk to you later in the week. I appreciate it as always.
Yeah, man. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And,
happy Thanksgiving
good luck out
to
there.
You too. You've been great. It's always fun to have you on, and I hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
Likewise. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. We will do some NFL buy and sell next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.